Today's Transmissions podcast is brought to you by 80stees.com. 80stees.com has an incredible selection of Transformers shirts and hoodies, including some amazing Transformers costume hoodies. Transform into Grimlock, Megatron, or even Optimus Prime with the 80stees.com costume hoodies.
As we come to the end of the year, we want to pause and think about what's really important during this holiday season. Transformers! So we've put together a couple of surveys asking our listeners to vote on their favorite toys and comics for 2013. Please be sure to vote via the links in the show notes. Voting will be open until Wednesday, December 18th, and we'll announce the results during our end-of-the-year show on New Year's Eve. Thanks for voting, and we hope everyone has a safe and happy holiday season.
Hello, all sentient beings, and welcome to the Transmissions Podcast, where we talk about all news, toys, and comic books related to the Transformers! On this episode of Transmissions, we have an interesting Tiki Prime Warrior to talk about. We'll be reviewing the very final issue of IDW's Transformers Beast Hunters, and we'll talk a little bit about Transformers 4 in our movie news segment. We have all this and so very much more on this episode of Transmissions.
Welcome to Transmissions, the podcast that grows great with Energon goodies. I'm your host, Charles, a.k.a. Big C, and I'm joined by the excellent Transmissions team, Yusuf, better known as Yoshi.
Yo!
Jeremy, a.k.a. Yakko.
Hey, how you doing?
And Daryl, the Cybertronian Beast.
Hey, everybody, how's it going? Let's talk Transformers.
All right, and you guys know the drill. We're going to start off with toys. So, Daryl, why don't you start us off?
All right, let's do that. We got today some first looks at prototype pictures, or even these are probably just CAD pictures, of a wheelie figure coming from X-Transbots. Now, if you remember correctly, we talked to Echo Transformer, who was working with X-Transbots to make his Fall of Cybertron Bruticus add-on. But this is a standalone figure from X-Transbots. It's in their Master Mini series, and they're calling it Not Wheelie right now. So, I mean, very creative. But this looks fantastic. It looks really, really good for a 1986 or Season 3 Wheelie figure. And there's not a lot to go on, unfortunately. This is really just a CGI modeling of the prototype, but I really like the way this thing looks. I mean, I have the original G1 figure, which was horrible, horrible figure. Just a little tiny little thing, but the face popped up underneath the window, and you just had to leave the window cracked open or opened, like swinging in the wind, just to see the guy's face. It was a bad, bad figure. But that's what Wheelie was in the 80s. But I really like the way this thing looks, and I can't wait to see what it actually turns out to look like. I'm hoping it looks a lot like this. What do you guys think?
The paint job looks good. The model looks good. I wonder when it's at this stage, if they've actually, in the CAD drawing, actually can transform it, or they're like, this is what we want the car to look like, and this is what we want the figure to look like.
It's a good idea. I don't know.
I think with the state of CAD these days, they probably do design in all the different gears and everything, and if it doesn't actually transform, they can say, okay, I want this piece to go here.
Yeah, that's the impression I got from talking with Echo Transformer. You know, CAD just makes everything possible.
I mean, at my work, I see a lot of people. I work in an engineering school doing IT stuff, not an engineer stuff. But like some of the like bioengineering people are like designing like knee joints and stuff in CAD, and you can actually like see how they move, and it's pretty amazing what you can do these days.
Mm-hmm.
But I was looking on the website now, and it looks like it is officially named Ollie.
Oh, it is named Ollie now. Yes, that's right.
That's what
yeah.
It is on their site.
Yeah, Ollie. That's cool.
They have it next to their, I guess they're not, is that Huffer for size comparison?
Yes. So. Yeah, and he's pretty cool. The not Huffer is, we haven't really talked much about him, but he works with the MP10 trailer for that one single time that he carried Optimus's trailer in the show. But
let me carry the load, Optimus.
Exactly, that one time. Yeah, but no, it's iGear did this a little while ago where they kind of did a run on minifigures, and I actually really like that, you know. Their price points weren't all that expensive, and very accessible, and I'm excited to see this come back. So I'm excited for Ollie.
You know, with Wheelie kind of playing a role in the current IDW fiction, it'd be neat to see if they would do a version that where he was like, I can't remember the planet's name, but he was on that planet who was kind of like known as the Wild Man, and his paint job was slightly different because he had been out in the wilderness all alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his arm was eaten by a monster, and he had to like kill the monster and then go into its stomach. He didn't kill it. He waited till the monster pooped and he got his arm back.
Yeah, I mean, it would just be neat if they would do like a differently painted version that had, you know, that resembled that.
Well, if you're looking at X-Transbot's site, they've got one of their splash pages for the title here. It shows their Huffer in like 5 different paint schemes. So doing multiple paint schemes doesn't really seem like a far stretch for them.
Yeah, I think one of the repaints for Huffer is Pipes, because Pipes was the other
Minibot
based on Huffer's mold.
Yeah.
Yeah, this definitely looks really cool. Looks very, 1986 accurate. So, mm-hmm. Looks pretty cool.
Will he come with a slingshot, though?
Well, right now it just looks like a regular gun, so maybe not.
If he doesn't, I'm sure Dr. Wu would make one.
Yeah. Yeah. And be able to ride on Grimlock.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. So, Jeremy, you're up next. What do you have?
Well, I don't know if this is something that will ever be for sale, but I saw this on the Transformers Reddit. This is called Tiki T Prime Warrior by Nemo. Nemo is the guy. His name is Mike Mendez. He's the guy that customized it. And he took one of those 8-inch little chibi Optimus Prime figures and customized it and made it into a little like tiki warrior that, like, you would see on like a tropical island or something. And it just, I always kind of like that aesthetic, like tiki bars and stuff. And this just looks really neat. I think it would be something that you would have like sitting out in your yard to, scare your neighbors. What do you think?
You know, we've said it before. I'm going to continue to say it. Prime just looks wrong without a faceplate. I know that makes this tiki with the mouth, but Prime needs his faceplate.
When I first look at it, I thought it was Optimus Primal.
Right.
And but yeah, it definitely reminds me of him rather than the original Optimus Prime, but it looks really cool.
I think I'd like to see like a whole line of these, just like, all the, just a bunch of your classic figures just in this aesthetic, and you could have like a whole army of them.
It looks really good. First glance, I definitely thought it was wood, but it's, the guy did a really, really good job on the customizing.
But I mean, just looking at it, you could easily see how someone could make this out of wood.
Yeah.
I mean, looking at the original figure compared to the tiki version, it's pretty amazing what he did with it.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a neat thing. I doubt it's ever going to be something that'll be mass produced, but things like this that people do where they take one toy and just make it. They completely change the whole thing, kind of. I'm just in awe of that skill.
Cool. All right, Yoshi, you're up next. I think you didn't find anything this week, right?
I didn't. I'm going to have to take a pass.
No.
All right, 50 lashes for Yoshi to be administered by Daryl.
Oh, God. At least I know there will be a sorry every time he hits me.
That's true.
Daryl's like, no, I'm not going to apologize. I'm just going to beat the living tar out of him.
Bend over.
You don't pick out anything for my segment, I hate you. What do you got, Charles? What toy are you bringing to the table that I didn't?
All right, so I escaped punishment this week because I found this Mastermind Creations and Make Toys. One was this Terminus Rapidus from Mastermind Creations, which is a not quick switch, which is the Autobot six changer from G1, and so they've got a figure from that they're making, a third party figure coming out, and these were announced on the TF Source holiday catalog, so there were some advanced pictures of that, and also there was the Make Toys is putting out this Quantron, which is their version of Computron. So it's another combiner figure, the 5 Technobots who combined into Computron. And this is the third party version of this. And so both of these things were shown in the TF Source catalog. And this was, we got this information from TFW 2005. So, Daryl, what did you think about this?
The Quick Switch is one figure that I had never even heard of. When I read this post originally, I went searching and I was like, the Autobots had a six changer? So I went and I had no idea. I mean, after a certain time, I fell out of Transformers completely. And I guess that's when this guy kind of showed up. But it looks good.
Yeah, he never was big in the fiction in the Western fiction, because he came out after the show was canceled and he never made it into the comics. But in the Japanese, I think it was the Headmaster's Japanese show, he figured there, and he was actually, I guess, Six-Shot's son.
Oh, really?
I haven't watched these shows at all, the Japanese shows at all, but apparently Quick Switch was, Six-Shot's son. So I guess there was some tension there since he joined the Autobots and Six-Shot was a Decepticon, so.
Yeah, read the wiki. You'll spend, like, hours and hours on all the Japanese stuff.
Yeah, wow. But no, the figure looks fantastic, like, the detail. I mean, obviously, you're going to say that on almost every third-party thing these days, but the detail on these things is just fantastic. And then Quantron, the Computron thing, this picture that's on the thread in on TFW is from taken at TFCon this year. And this thing is just massive. I mean, I saw this thing in person, and it was, it's gotta be like a foot tall. It's wow. Just humongous. And yeah, it's mind boggling how cool this thing looks in person. It's also going to be expensive as all hell.
Yeah, I had three of the Technobots when I was a kid, but I never got the other two. So I had Computron with no arms, or I guess for the ones I had, if it was accurate, he'd have one arm and one leg, and he'd be hopping around, I guess.
Yeah, I did have Computron complete as a kid. I had the full thing, and he was cool. I did dig him as a kid, but he never showed up in the original show unless you watched Headmasters, which didn't air here. So yeah, I had a toy that I didn't really have any fiction for, but I didn't care as a kid. I had a really cool toy that I liked.
Oh, he was in season 3 of the Transformers.
Was he?
Grimlock created the Technobots when he got that new brain, when he was super smart.
Oh, yes. That's right. It's been a while. I gotta sit down and watch season 3 again.
Yeah, so that was the thing. Like, Grimlock basically used his super smarts to give them to Computron to make him, you know, super intelligent.
That's
cool.
And
then Grimlock went back to being stupid.
I just like this. It looks really cool. It's one of those, another one that's going to be way too expensive for me to ever buy.
So, Jeremy, what did you think about it?
Thought it was okay. I'm not really big into some of these that were just in the Japanese fiction. I mean, like Daryl, I've never seen a lot of that. I've tried to get into Headmasters, and I've never made it past, I think, the fifth episode. So, I mean, a lot of this stuff doesn't really, I don't know. The toys, since there's no associated fiction that I can get into, I mean, once he shows up in IDW, I'll probably be a lot more interested. Like Star Saber.
And Yoshi, what did you think? You'd seen Computron back in the 80s or Quick Switch?
You know, Charles, I'm pretty sure I have. I'm just not remembering them. And though the figures look very articulate and pretty well, you know, modeled out here, it's not a character that I've got enough of a feeling for to want to invest money into having an action figure for him.
Yeah.
But I'm glad there are people. I'm glad that this realm of the toys is being explored and created for those that are.
Yeah, and we still don't have we only have like a couple of images of them, so we don't really know what they're really going to look like yet. So curious to see how they'll turn out when they, you know, when they're all painted and everything.
Right.
All right, so I think we'll wrap up our toy section here. And so I just want to remind everyone about the surveys we put out. So we have two surveys for the end of the year for toys and comics. So you can vote for your favorite toys, both official toys and third-party toys, and vote for your favorite comics that were out this year for 2013. Please give us some feedback. We have links to our surveys in the show notes and on our website. And make sure you get your choices in. So this episode is going up on December 17th. So our voting ends on December 18th. So you've only got one more day to make your selections known. And then we'll announce the results on our end of the year show, which I believe will be going up on New Year's Eve. So look forward to that. And we hope you'll take the time to vote and let us know what you think.
Should be a lot of fun. I can't wait to see what people pick out.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we're going to move on to comics. All right. So we've got one comic to review this week, which is Transformers Prime Beast Hunters number 8, and then we'll also have our classic review. Just before we get into that, I wanted to just mention something that I found about Dark Cybertron Part 4, which we reviewed last week, which was the one where the Lost Light was being attacked by the Ammonites, those other robotic life forms who were nicknamed Minicons, and they were shown to be omni-combinational robots so that they could combine into bigger and bigger robots. And what something that was pointed out by one of the users on the IDW forum, it goes by Noisemaker, he mentioned that the Ammonites combine into a giant Ammonite in the comic. And for those who don't know, I didn't know this either, an Ammonite is a cephalopod, which is a like a snail or a
shellfish.
Shellfish, yeah. And so it's an extinct animal that is found in fossils, and I guess that's what James Roberts based the name of these robots on, because they combine into something that looks very much like this giant a giant version of this shellfish.
Yeah, like when they were going after the rod pod,
right?
That really looks like the picture on Wikipedia for Ammonite.
Yeah, exactly. So looking at that, so I remembered back in More Than Meets the Eye number 22, they mentioned that there were two warring factions, which were the Ammonites and the Terradors. So I thought, well, if Ammonite means something, what does Terrador mean? And I put that into Google, but Terrador by itself doesn't come up with anything. But of course, if you are familiar with Latin, Terra means earth. Or I don't know if it's Latin or Greek. It's one of those languages.
It's Latin.
Okay. Oh yeah, sure. you took Latin, Jeremy. That's right. So you should know that.
Yeah, ninth grade.
Yeah, so Terra is Earth, and then I put door into dictionary.com, and one of the definitions for door, which I guess it had an accent, so it's from the French. I guess it would be doré or something. And that was the name for a walleye, which is a kind of fish that lives in North America. So putting that together, I guess the Terradors would mean a land fish or a land shark. I don't know. So I actually asked James Roberts on Twitter, but he didn't respond. So
yeah, that's not surprising.
Maybe he was watching bad Saturday Night Live sketches from like the 70s.
Maybe. Yeah.
Land shark.
Yeah, so I guess we're just left to speculate. Maybe an answer will come in future issues of Dark Cybertron.
Yeah, we haven't actually seen the Terradors yet.
No, we haven't. You're right. Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe that's where Skybite came from.
Maybe.
Oh, that'd be hilarious. It's just a whole race of sharks.
And they're all poets.
Yes.
All right. So with that out of the way, let's move on to our review of Transformers Prime Beast Hunters number 8.
Sob.
So we shed a tear, pour one out for Beast Hunters. This is the final issue
of the series. Beast Hunters.
Yeah, so, and I think, you know, unfortunately, I think the issue also kind of suffers for having to quickly kind of wrap things up, and it doesn't really do justice to a lot of the characters that had been, that had been built up in the series, like some of the supporting characters. But we'll get into that in the issue. Okay, so Transformers Prime Beast Hunters number 8. The story is by Mike Johnson and Margaret Scott, and it is written by Mike Johnson. Art is by Augustin Padilla, and colors are by Priscilla Tramontano. So this is the final issue where the Dinobots have gotten all their surviving fellow bots from underground back to the surface, and they just met up with RC, Bumblebee, and Bulkhead. And while they met up, but they're still in the middle of a battle with some of the forged Decepticons who are attacking the Dinobots after they reach the surface. So we have a nice we start off with the Dinobots and the other Autobots, RC, Bulkhead, and Bumblebee joining forces to attack to fight back against the forged Decepticons. And, you know, we see RC says Autobots, and then Grimlock says Dinobots, and then simultaneously they both say attack. So we have a nice, after the first page, we have a nice 2-page spread of the Dinobots and Autobots attacking the Forged. So unfortunately we're on a review copy, so we don't get to see the 2-page spread, but it looks pretty good. So I'm sure it'll look good when we have the actual paper copy.
Yeah, it'll look much better when you actually see the 2 pages connected.
Yeah. All right. So, RC, Grimlock is surprised to see RC and asks, you know, what are you doing here? And RC says it's a long story. I'll fill you in as soon as we take care of business. So they finish, mopping up the rest of the Forged. Grimlock hopes that since he sees his fellow Autobots, that means they won the war. But Bumblebee says, well, it looks like the war is still going with, you know, all the guys attacking us. So finally they finish up. Looks like they pretty much destroy all the Forged Decepticons who are attacking. And RC comments that these guys don't look like any Decepticons they found before. And Slag says that they're the Forged, they're Shockwave's cannon fodder. And, you know, that touches off RC mentions that Shockwave was one of the last con that she saw before she left Cybertron with Cliffjumper. So that's a nice callback to one episode of the show where they show a flashback of RC and Cliffjumper escaping from Shockwave through a space bridge. After they finished up with the Forged, RC mentions that the planet is, has been reborn. We were stranded on a planet called Earth, but now that we're back and Cybertron's coming back to life, all thanks to Optimus Prime's sacrifice. And Grimlock says, sacrifice? RC explains that, and this is from the events of the Transformers Prime movie, Predacons Rising. At the end of that movie, Optimus Prime sacrificed himself since his spark had been joined with the AllSpark, he had to return the AllSpark back to the core of the planet, which meant that his life would end. And so that's what he did. So, you know, they all decide to start heading back to Kaon, since that's where the Autobots are setting up a settlement. They say, you know, we're not the only Autobots who have returned. So we're starting to rebuild the city of Kaon. And RC says, so Grimlock asks who's in charge, and RC says, no, I'm not in charge. We're just trying to follow in Optimus Prime's footsteps and work together as a team. You're welcome to come. If you don't want to join us, she starts off, but then Grimlock breaks in. Well, last time we saw any of you, you guys didn't want us. You know, you treated us like we were different, like we weren't true Autobots. And RC says, well, everything's changed now. So, you know, we really want everyone to be together. So let's head back. But their conversation is interrupted by the return of that Predacon from the last issue. So he comes back and starts attacking again. And, everyone starts to, they just decide to, fight back. So they're like, yeah, let's take care of business. Let's get rid of this Predacon. But, he's too powerful for them. He starts picking up individual bots, one by one and carrying them off. So I guess they make it seem like he's eating the bots or using them for food or something. It's not really clear. It's, the Predacon doesn't really, explain its motivations or anything. I think in the show we saw some of the Predacons, but they all would transform into regular bots and were intelligent. But this one just seems to be like a mindless monster. But
yeah,
I guess one of the many things that unfortunately is left as a loose end, unfortunately, since the series is ending here. But they decide, so Grimlock has a plan to deal with the Predacon, and his plan starts with them splitting up into 3 different groups. So one group is, Bumblebee, Snarl, and Sludge, and they're traveling in one direction. Then, Bulkhead, Firestar, and Slag are in another group, and they're just talking while they're walking across the landscape, trying to get towards Kaon. And, there's a little bit of tension. The Dinobots aren't really sure that, they're going to be able to rejoin with the rest of the Autobots, but Bumblebee tries to reassure Sludge and Snarl that everything's different now. We've got to all work together. And then Slag is just talking with Bulkhead about how we had to, we were all deep underground, but then we had these planet-wide quakes and we had to get back to the surface. And then Bulkhead mentions, oh, these quakes, that was the planet reigniting. That was us. So there's, you know, just a little bit of a hint of, you know, Bulkhead.
I'm kind of upset. I mean, I know it's because it's so abbreviated, but that would be a perfect time for there to be some more tension between the Dinobots and the Autobots.
Yeah.
Because them reigniting the planet killed, you know, entire settlements.
Right.
And you have nothing from the Dinobot side on that at all. It's just like, oh, hey, I hear the Predacon. Let's keep going.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, you know, I would have thought that the Dinobots would have been a little bit more upset, since it seems like what the Autobots did basically killed half their friends and followers. But it's not really touched on at all here, other than this, you know, one comment from Bulkhead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure if the series was still going, that would have been explored.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that I'm a little disappointed in is that, you know, we had two supporting characters in Firestar and Chromia, and they get no dialogue in this issue. I mean, we don't even see Chromia. We see, you know, Firestar in a couple of shots with the other robots, but we don't even see Chromia. I mean, Chromia is apparently completely replaced by RC. I mean, they had similar character models, but it's like, you know, we've just forgotten that Chromia was there with the rest of them.
Yeah, I was wondering how they would deal with that, and they apparently dealt with that by just erasing her.
Yeah, this reminds me of, you know, when the sitcom would just have a character disappear from one episode to the next and not mention them ever again.
Or you have the new Daryl from I Dream of Jeannie.
Yeah.
It's a whole new actor, just don't even mention that it changed.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so we continue on. So that's the second group. So we had the one group with Bumblebee, Sludge, and Snarl, the second group with Bulkhead and Slag, and now we have the third group with Swoop and RC leading that group. And Swoop is, you know, talking about how, you know, RC's mentions that the Predacon sounds like it's right above us, but we can't see him. And then Swoop says, you know, yeah, take it from a bot with wings. Nothing hits you faster than an aerial attack. And he's, you know, getting into a little bravado where he's talking about, you know, one time he, you know, spotted a couple of cons and was going to attack them. But just as he's in the middle of his little bragging, the Predacon swoops down and attacks him from above. So Swoop's, you know, like, yeah, like I was saying, attack from above. So Swoop starts to get the plan in motion. So RC, you know, tells him to go, and Swoop tries to lead the Predacon away. So the Predacon chases Swoop into a little cavern, and Swoop, you know, Swoop talks a big game, but under his breath, he mentions like how he's really scared out of his circuits right now. And then, you know, he's flying into the cavern. He's mumbling, please work, please work, please work. So we get to see Swoop's bravado is pretty much an act, and he's not quite as confident as he puts on. But the Predacon follows him, and as he follows him into this, this underground cavern, Swoop shouts, Grimlock now, and then from, you know, from behind some debris, Grimlock and Bumblebee pop out and start shooting the Predacon. So they shoot him several times and knock him down, manage to disable him. So Swoop says, you know, he's down for the count, let's get out of here. So Bumblebee, Grimlock, and Swoop get out of the cavern, and then they, you know, they fire on the entrance to basically cave it in and seal the Predacon in there.
What's up with Bumblebee's eyes? you see that?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like your really big anime-looking eyes. I mean, that's just not how it looked in the show.
Yeah. And he also, it seems like he's lost the mouth that he got in the last episode.
Yeah, but he's talking at least.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, his eyes do look a little weird.
Yeah, I mean, in the other scenes, it's kind of okay, I guess. But when you see him straight on, the eyes just look odd.
Yeah, and another thing I was confused by was that wasn't Bumblebee walking with Sludge and Snarl? How was he, like, placed in this ambush with Grimlock if he was, you know, with that other group?
Oh, yeah.
They don't really, like, tell how much time passed or if he got a chance to circle around and
yeah, maybe they got there first.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's just not really shown very well to the reader. But anyway, so they've trapped the Predacon in this cavern, and Bumblebee says, do you really think that'll hold it? And Grimlock says it's an old Decepticon bunker, and they built them strong enough. And Bumblebee says, why didn't we just finish him off? But Grimlock just says he's, you know, he's seen too much destruction, for, you know, for a long time. So he wants to, you know, he doesn't want to kill things unnecessarily. Of course, you know, I don't know how that squares with them, you know, wiping out all the Forged who were attacking them at the beginning of the issue, but anyway.
Yeah, maybe that was the final straw.
Yeah. So they make it to New Kaon, or I guess just Kaon City, and they're, you know, a lot of bots are meeting up with each other, so I guess there are more Autobot survivors who have already gotten to the city. I guess maybe these are guys who've come from space, who answered the call from the other Autobots. And so the bots that the Dinobots came with are all meeting up and shaking hands, and then Slag and Snarl are, you know, saying, "Oh, I don't know, where are we going to fit in here? You know, look at us, we could transform and walk on two legs like the rest of them, but at the end of the day, we'd just be hiding who we really are, and they'd never accept us." But Bulkhead butts in and says, and, you know, basically says, "Why are you guys whining so much? I thought you were Dinobots." And looks like he, you know, he's going to start a little skirmish, but RC comes in and says, "Easy, calm down. What Bulkhead's trying to say is that you all belong here. Everyone should be here. And Optimus Prime wanted all the Autobots to work together and build a new world." And two legs, four legs, wings or wheels. It's a new world for all. So. Doesn't matter what your alt mode is. unfortunately, Grimlock doesn't want to stay in Kaon. They want to build their own city and start rebuilding for all the bots that they were taking care of underground. And, he says he thinks they'll call it New Spark, which, I guess is a nice, a nice little, ending.
Yeah.
And Grimlock has some narration. He just says, "More things change, the more things stay the same. And, or so I thought, but after all we've been through, I think the truth is that when things really change, when they really transform, nothing will ever be the same."
You know, I mean, I think that is Grimlock that says it, but they have a purple box around it, which, you know, makes me think that RC is saying it. But, I mean, you know, this really should be coming from Grimlock.
Yeah, I was confused by that too, and I went back and looked at issue 7, and issue 7 also has narration by Grimlock, and it uses the same color boxes.
Okay.
So that's how I knew it was still Grimlock, because it's the same blue box with a purple border.
Right. It's just now you have a character with purple.
Yeah.
But when you read the last word, it says nothing will ever be the same. That's RC wouldn't talk like that.
Yeah.
That's what clued me in.
And I like it in the last page. You see RC and Firestar standing with Grimlock, but of course Chromia is still nowhere to be found. But
yeah.
So I mean, it's unfortunate. I think this issue, I think it's a good wrap up. It pretty much wraps up all the storylines that were started within Transformers Prime Beast Hunters, the comic. But unfortunately, there's, you know, just so many things that could have been explored that won't be now, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if they started off the integration with the Prime characters earlier in the series, like maybe up or issue 3 or 4, where you have the initial Dinobot only stuff, but then it just goes right into the combined. I wonder if that would have made a difference in the sales.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I was actually, I mean, maybe it's just the timing that they weren't really able to do that, because with the Predacons Rising movie not coming out till October, they didn't want to spoil any of the plot points from that movie.
Yeah, and I guess by then they already knew they were going to cancel it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, like you said, it did wrap up, I guess, enough of it to be a kind of a satisfying wrap-up, but it did feel very rushed.
Yeah.
I can tell you the biggest disappointment for me out of this whole thing, the last issue anyway, was I entered the issue thinking, okay, here we go. The rest of the Transformers Prime cast will be in this one. They've got nowhere else to go. And I was completely let down. They didn't have a single other member.
Yeah, you know, when they got back to Kaon, at least in the last panel, could we have seen, you know, Ultra Magnus or Wheeljack or Smokescreen or
somebody else in there? Come on, right? Yeah. Like,
it's not like the people writing this comic weren't also writers on the show, so they know all the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a silly question: do you think maybe that they had written out and planned the panels for several more issues, told that they were going to be canceled, and had to fit ending dialogue and existing art?
It's possible. I don't know how far out they do the issues. Maybe
I don't either.
I mean,
I know they had rough plots, or I'm pretty sure they had rough plots with the general idea of where they wanted the characters to end up, but they, because between issues 4 and 5, a lot of time has passed and you know a lot of stuff has happened, but they just never, they just, you know, did a big time jump.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate. I mean, this issue's a little disappointing, but I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's the comic's fault. I think it's just we're disappointed that the series is not continuing. And that, you know, the fact that they had to wrap it up so quickly means that just a lot of things get left on the table.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of fiction, the Dinobots have never been written this well, ever.
No.
I mean, even the G1 Marvel stuff, you didn't get, I mean, you have Grimlock getting characterization, but the other Dinobots were kind of in the background. And this one, there was at least a little bit of focus put on each one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to agree. It was very well written, and like Jeremy said, each Dinobot had screen time, you know? It wasn't just like it's been treated in all the other fictions where Grimlock speaks for all 5 of them, you know?
Yeah, and I like them adding the supporting characters, too. I mean, even though we only got to see them a little bit, I thought Firestar and Chromia were good reintroductions, you know, since we haven't seen those guys since... I mean, not really, you know, not officially, I guess, since the, the G1 cartoon.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to see these guys, this comic go, even though I didn't read it. I know that there are Beast Hunters fans out there, but I wonder what they're going to replace the slot with, if they're going to replace it with something Transformers. We know Generation 1 is going to end next year. We know that one of the things filling the slots is the Transformers G.I. Joe crossover storyline. I wonder if they're going to fill this remaining slot with another Transformers story.
Well, Dark Cybertron, and there's supposed to be a third ongoing coming out of that.
Oh. Well, there you go. So, that answers it.
But I think between that and the G.I. Joe crossover, those might be the 2 slots.
Yep. But we'll see. We still don't have really any news about this mysterious third art going, other than that little tweet that we got last week that was just a speculation of whether Shane McCarthy is writing Transformers. But
maybe he's just doing his own fanfic.
All right. I think the art was pretty much on par with the rest of the series. I still like it. I think that I wish I could see the 2-page splash, but I will see it next week. But since we don't have it in hand yet, it looks pretty good.
I kind of, on my iPad, I opened the PDF we got in iBooks, and I kind of swiped between, so they were kind of on the same page, but never got the full thing. But it does look, I mean, like a pretty good scene with all the characters in action.
That's cool.
Yeah. You know, it'd be really neat if we could get one of the writers on in a future episode and talk to them about it.
Yeah, so we'll work towards that. And hopefully that will happen in the future.
We've been doing pretty good getting IDW people on. Maybe we can do that.
Yeah, we're trying, dear listeners, so keep watching. All right, I think that'll wrap up our review of Transformers Prime Beast Hunters number 8. And so we'll move on to our classic review. And this is Marvel US Transformers number 16, Plight of the Bumblebee.
It is a very Bumblebee-heavy issue. Before I get into that, I want to mention our sponsor, 80stees.com. They have a fantastic selection of 80s and 90s TV theme, movie theme, music theme t-shirts. And I was realizing today, I haven't asked any of you guys if you've ever ordered anything from 80stees.com. Have you gotten anything from 80stees, Charles?
Yeah, I've gotten a couple of nice Transformers shirts, and they are really good quality shirts. They're very nice, very comfortable, and I love the designs and everything they put on. They look, you know, really cool, look like art straight from the G1 cartoon. So I've got one shirt with Optimus Prime and a couple of other Autobots on there, and then I've got a shirt with Soundwave, and they look great.
Awesome. What about you, Jeremy? Have you gotten any shirts from 80s Tees?
Yeah, I have a couple, too. I have one that's basically just Soundwave's chest. And then I have another one that I wore recently to Steel City Con, and that's a local comic convention here in Pittsburgh. And it says Grimlock Hate Push-Ups, and it's basically Grimlock with his nose and his toes on the ground, and his arms are, you know, not even close. And I got so many comments from people saying how they love that shirt.
Well, that's awesome. And what about you, Daryl? Have you gotten any shirts from them?
Yeah, I did. I picked up, let's see, it's Megatron, and he's doing the Scarface picture. He's doing the Scarface poster. It's really cool. I've always liked that picture.
Oh, the black and white one?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I really like that one. And I've got an Optimus Prime one where he's, I think it's an IDW kind of drawing. It's really cool. He's just kind of got his gun held up and, you know, looks really badass. So, yeah, it's really cool. I really like it. I would want to tell people, though, that I do typically wear a double XL, and these shirts, mine fit a little tight, a little snug. So if you're typically a double X, I would probably recommend ordering a triple X just to get a little extra wiggle room in the shirts.
All right. Well, that's good to know. And I think with that, we'll just go ahead and jump into our classics review. So let's check out this cover, guys. We've got a purple background cover. We've got Bumblebee. Oh God, he's just the way the hand is over the head with the whole pose, and taking a lot of fire from some aerial Decepticons, where it looks like he's trying not to fall on some humans that are behind him. And then we've got in a lighter purple text on the side of the cover saying Bumblebee's last stand, implying that this is the end of a beloved character in our comic book universe here.
I loved this cover when I was a kid. This is one of the ones I've had since, like, I bought this as a kid and kept it all the way through. And the fact that you could see the shots going through Bumblebee, you know, just made it such a badass cover for me. I was like, he's getting killed. He's like dead. This is it. Bumblebee's dead. I had to have this book.
Yeah, I'm guessing since he's a robot, that's how they could kind of get around that with the comics code.
Probably, yeah.
Oh, you're right, huh?
Well, I think by the 80s, Marvel was no longer in the comics code, weren't they?
No, it's on the cover here.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that most DC and Marvel dropped it, I think, in the 90s. Or maybe 2000s.
Okay.
Now it's just a read at your own risk.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, jumping into this story, the issue starts off, it's kind of interesting. The first page of this issue, with the title of it being displayed at the top, Plight of the Bumblebee, you've got a schematic, a computer schematic of Bumblebee on that page, and that's pretty much all it is. But it looks like a schematic of the toy and not how he's portrayed as a comic book character. So this actually represents the toy that you could pick up at the time. And it's interesting that they did that, and I wonder why that came to be. Does anybody have any ideas behind that?
Well, in the credits at the bottom, it says special thanks to Elliot Brown for splash page design and art. So maybe if they just asked Elliot Brown to say, draw us a picture of, you know, Bumblebee in a 3D computer model. And if they only gave him like the toy as a reference, that might be why he drew it that way.
You're right. Or, you know, they just want to make sure that blame goes to him for not being comic book accurate.
I mean, it also could just represent how they don't really have a full understanding of the Transformers, like their physiology. So this is just based on the reports they've gotten. This is what they can recreate.
Yeah, but this is the Decepticons computer, so
oh,
they should
I didn't
know
read that. Yeah, well, that's how he looked like in issue one.
so they haven't seen him since.
Here's one issue of Transformers and a toy. Do something with this.
Yeah.
Huh. I don't know. It still, you know, time travel would be a fly on a wall. I'd love the chance.
It is a nice little drawing, though.
No, oh, yeah, absolutely. It just doesn't fit.
Right.
So as we turn the page, we're revealed to a Decepticon story/plot where they think they've got a way to actually control an Autobot, and they want to go after the weakest Autobot of them all, which they believe to be Bumblebee. And with this device, they should be able to control him and gain access to the Ark, gain access to what the Autobots talk about, give him the upper hand in a lot of things, and hopefully put them out in upcoming battles. And as we flip through here, we kind of cut to Bumblebee, who's outside the Ark having a little pity party for himself. He feels that he's not been as valuable as the other Autobots in recent skirmishes, and feels that maybe the Autobots would be better off without him. This is a classic sob story storyline that TV shows and Power Rangers have milked to death and kind of pulled me out of it. I'm like, oh, this is what we're going through. This is the story. Okay. Continuing on.
Yeah. I mean, it's especially, you know, it especially gets that little Three's Company vibe where inside the Autobots are talking about how valuable Bumblebee is. And then outside Bumblebee's like, oh, I can't hear them. They must be insulting me. So
Right. They're just talking about how much I suck. I will say that I really like that the way it was drawn in the middle panel there, where Bumblebee's got one hand on an arc window, I believe, and he's just kind of looking down at his feet and feeling depressed. I kind of like that look. It's very dark. As for the rest of the art with Bumblebee, he's got too much of a human-y face, I think.
Yeah, I also like the transformation panel right next to it. I thought that
was
pretty
cool.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, that's really cool, too. But, you know, his face, it's just his face in that is what takes it away from me. I don't know why. Personal opinion, doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, it's especially jarring when you see, like, his face looks really chubby here on the left panel, but then the next page, his face looks completely different.
Right.
The left panel kind of more resembles the cartoon face, and then on the next page, it's just completely different.
Yeah, he looks kind of like just like a human wearing a Bumblebee helmet.
I wonder what was going through their mind when they were drawing the comic book version of Bumblebee out and thinking, you know what this needs? Horns. I mean, it fits. I'm so used to it. But as I'm looking at it now, I'm like, you know, somebody made that call. Who was that person?
Well, the toy does have horns. I mean,
right.
They're tiny, but they're there.
It's just, it's maybe it's a Cybertronian thing. I don't know. It's just, it does seem a little odd for.
Yeah.
But then, you know, now that I think about it, if he didn't have horns, he'd look even weirder. He'd look like something out of Buck Rogers. Okay, there's a story here. So Bumblebee gets depressed, transforms, runs away from home, like you do. And as he's leaving, or as he's just driving off, he's spotted by Laserbeak, who immediately contacts the Decepticons, and they start to attack Bumblebee, who finds refuge in a used car lot and just kind of parks in plain sight.
In the scene where, you know, he's basically there backed in between the two cars, I'm wondering if that scene in the Michael Bay, like the first Transformers movie where Sam's getting his car and you see this VW bug, I'm wondering if that was meant to kind of refer to this, if maybe the writers actually had read some of the comics. Because that's what I started thinking is that car lot in the movie.
Yeah, I did too when I was rereading this. And I don't know. I'd like to think that somebody on that staff that's making those movies is like, I gotta throw something in here to make people not as pissed at these shitty movies that are coming out, but
yeah,
I don't know.
It's probably just a happy coincidence.
It might be. You know, and I remember reading a bunch of Bay interviews at the time where he's like, I just love the idea of a kid in his car and getting his first car. Like, I don't know. I will quit talking about him. So basically Bumblebee hides in this used car lot and the Decepticons can't find him, and they just are in patrol off in the background somewhere. And Bumblebee just stays there, not knowing anything better to do. And that evening, a couple of crooks break into the used car lot, and they hijack this Volkswagen Beetle that is Bumblebee. And nonchalantly, Bumblebee just goes along with it. Figures, whatever, I need new friends. These guys will work. And they go on a joyride recklessly. They eat fast food inside a Bumblebee, which I'm sure would piss him off. And while they're out joyriding, while these crooks are joyriding with Bumblebee, he breaks down as a result of the damage he took from the Decepticon attack earlier. So Bumblebee kind of breaks down on the side of the road. The two hijackers get out of the car and manage to somehow make a lot of comments about how weird the engine is, but repair him completely just in time for the Decepticons to make another attack on him. During this time, the Autobots catch wind of what's been happening to Bumblebee on the local news, and so they roll out to find him and help him and bring him back home. And Skyfire is the first to show up while Bumblebee is being attacked by the Decepticons, and Skyfire is shot out of the sky, and Bumblebee's transformed there. You know, on one hand, he's got these humans that aren't the nicest characters, but he doesn't want them to get hurt. And then on the other hand, he's got Skyfire, who's gotten hurt and it's kind of like a catch 22. Who do I save? And luckily by the end of the issue, he doesn't have to make that decision because the rest of the Autobots show up and Bumblebee realizes he is a contributing member to the Autobots and he does deserve a place on their team. And, you know, it's a campy, cheesy story. I didn't find it particularly good or particularly awful in any particular way. I felt like it was a rehashed story that other comics and TV shows have used before. What'd you think, Jeremy?
I thought that it was just like one of those fun little throwaway stories. Doesn't really contribute to any ongoing kind of arcs, but I guess they didn't really do that so much in the 80s. One thing I thought was odd, there was a scene where Laserbeak detects that Bumblebee has been reactivated like shortly after he was in the stolen by the two humans, but he says the one called Bumblebee, and they've been fighting for millions of years. Surely they're all pretty much on a first name basis with each other.
First name basis of hate. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it seems odd, that kind of speaking, but
I could forgive it, I guess.
Yeah. It's something you would expect to also see as an episode of the show. I thought it was that level of story.
Yeah. I feel like I'm being way too hard on it, but you know, I've read over 30 issues now, and there's definitely, even in these first 16, there are better examples of writing the storyline, I think, than this story. What do you think, Charles?
Yeah, I think I agree with Jeremy. One thing I did notice though is that this is written by Len Kaminsky, so I think this might be the only issue not written by Bob Budiansky or Simon Furman of the G1 run.
Huh.
So that's pretty interesting. The other thing I noticed is that if you look at when they have the news report of the robots attacking Bumblebee, and he says this is on page 11 in the middle panel. There has been no new information relating to the sighting of several flying robot aircraft that were spotted conducting mysterious maneuvers over Wisconsin earlier today. So, okay, Bumblebee left the Ark, which is in Mount St. Hilary, which is supposed to be in Oregon, and he somehow got to Wisconsin, and then the Decepticons attacked him. So, I mean, for all our non-U.S. listeners who may not be familiar with the geography in the U.S., Wisconsin is near the Great Lakes in the middle of the country, and Oregon is on the west coast. So I put it into Google Maps. There's about 2,000 miles between Oregon and Wisconsin. So I'm just wondering how Bumblebee got there that fast.
It explains how Jetfire got there that fast.
But, yeah, and all the other Autobots, for that matter.
Yeah, they eventually showed up. That is, I wonder if that was a mistake or not.
They space-bridged over.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
Do you remember this issue from when you were younger, Daryl?
Yeah, I do. I don't remember it word for word. Like I said, I recently reread all of the 80 issues, but they do kind of blur together after a while.
I understand.
And I did like the names of the two crooks are Waldo and Ernest. It's just random weird names for two characters.
So. Very much. I wonder if there's a record of like what were popular names back then, and if those were anywhere in the top 20.
Yeah, and these crooks don't seem very smart. They thought a Volkswagen Bug could beat a hot rod in a drag race. I mean, they didn't know it was Bumblebee, right?
Right.
Yeah. I was just looking on the TF Wiki for this, and Elliot Brown, who did that splash page. Uh-huh. It says he did similar duties for most of the technical drawings in the official handbooks of the Marvel Universe.
Oh.
So he just does those, I guess, those blueprint-type drawings.
Okay.
He was Marvel's go-to guy.
Yeah, and originally this was supposed to be an issue done by Peter David, but it says that Marvel lost the script and the artist was really slow. So they had to go with this.
Do a command find for Wisconsin and see if they have anything to add about that.
Oh, yeah, it does. It says Mount St. Hilary is apparently in or very near to Wisconsin in this issue instead of Oregon.
I see. Well, that's going to end our classic review. Next week, we get to travel to Cybertron.
Oh, wait, not next week. The holidays are coming, so our reviews are going to be on hold for a couple of weeks.
Oh, okay. Well, then I guess our listeners will just have to frickin' wait.
Read ahead.
Yeah, next week will be our Christmas episode or holiday episode for people who don't celebrate Christmas. And then
they should. It's great.
And then we'll have a New Year's episode, and then we'll have a New Year's Eve episode, I should say, where we talk about the results of our survey. And then the next episode will be the first of the new year, and we'll talk about what's happening for 2014, what's coming up for 2014. And then I think after that, we'll resume back to our regularly scheduled reviews. So just a couple, you know, a little wait for the holidays. It'll be fun.
So good. These holiday issues, this Christmas episode should be pretty good. I'm looking forward to doing that.
Yep.
Got to dig up my Santa hat.
All right, so I think that'll wrap up our comic section, and we're going to move on to movie news.
Oh, yay.
You thought we were done with Michael Bay.
No, that's the animated sound. You got to do the...
That's right, the sound that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
All right. What do we got for movie news? Is Michael Bay supporting a new format he's going to change his mind on in 3 weeks or what?
So, Daryl, you found the little tidbit for us, didn't you?
Yeah, well, this got posted up on the TFW forum, and it's from ET Canada. So, hey, my peeps. They were on the Transformers 4 set and doing some interviews with the cast, Mark Wahlberg and Nicola Peltz. And, yeah, they're quick little interviews. You know, they don't really say too much, you know, standard interviews. The Nicola Peltz one is almost meaningless. She's the Megan Fox or the Rose Huntington Wheatley character, right? She's the pretty face for the franchise, right? So, but the Mark Wahlberg one was kind of funny. He was just getting interviewed, and the interview lady asked him about Dinobots. She's like, "Dinobots? What are Dinobots? The internet's blown up about these things." And he's just like, "What? I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about, huh? I can't comment on that. I don't know what you're talking about." I found it very funny. He just kind of backed away from the question, couldn't comment, just left it right alone. So it was really, really interesting to see that. We posted it up on the link, and I've put a timestamp on the video so you can, it just takes you right to the Dinobot part of the video, but obviously you can watch it, the whole thing there too.
You know, one thing I've seen a few of these interviews with Wahlberg, and I do get the sense that he actually knows what Transformers are. He's played with them with his kids. So, I mean, at least there's that going for him. Whereas Michael Bay really has no concept other than they're big robots. Mm-hmm.
I like Mark Wahlberg as a guy. I think he seems like he's really fun, you know? I think that he brings a lot of humor to it. Shia LaBeouf was just a punk, you know? He seemed like he was a bit of a dweeb. So I like the addition of Mark Wahlberg to the cast. He adds a cool factor to it that I enjoy.
I think he also adds a little bit of a respectability factor.
Yeah, well, he's been in a lot of movies that have, been really well received. Obviously, The Fighter was amazing, but he's definitely shed the Marky Mark aspect of his life.
So we're not going to have like a Vanilla Ice type thing from in this movie.
The Ninja Turtles thing. He's just not going to break out into a Marky Mark style rap in the middle of this movie with dancing robots in the back. It'd be hilarious, but no.
Ninja,
I don't think so.
Ninja rap.
No, so they're funny, but the Nicola Peltz one, she's about to get famous, and she doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't seem worthy of it.
At least, I mean, at the very least, she's at least an actress and not a model. Like, Michael Bay seems to cast all his female roles go to people who aren't actually actors. And
that's
Nicola
true.
Peltz was actually in, I think, some movies before. So she was, I mean, unfortunately, she was in The Last Airbender, which I heard was a terrible movie.
Yeah.
But she was in it. So she's an actress.
It's true. Anyway, that's all the time we should spend on the movies, because it's, it's going to take up more of our time than we really want to anyway.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe that's something we'll discuss in our looking forward to 2014 episode.
Or dreading.
All right, so I guess we'll move on from movie news and go right into our trips to the store. So, Daryl, what have you picked up this week?
I got a couple things. I just, you know, not too much. Obviously, we reviewed it last week, More Than Meets the Eye number 24. That's Dark Cybertron chapter 4. I picked that up at my local comic store. I got the Casey Collar Ratchet cover. That's kind of cool. And I picked up a Cyberverse toy, Transformers Prime Beast Hunters Cyberverse Legion Class Ripper Snapper. And I've been looking for this guy forever. He is the last guy that I needed to create Abominus. So I finally got all five of them, and I'll start doing reviews on all five and start putting together Abominus. And I've been teaching my four-and-a-half-year-old daughter how to say Abominus in a very low and gruff tone of voice.
It's Abominus. Quite...
Exactly.
Abominus.
So, yeah, it's been fun.
Do you ever, you've got a little girl?
Yes.
Do you ever tell her, like, when she goes to bed and you've got guests over, to just come out, like, an hour later and be like, "They're here," and then walk back into her room? I can't wait to have a kid and just make her creepy like that.
No, I haven't tried that yet.
Dude,
but,
you're giving up. This is why you have kids.
I don't think she'd get that, though. She's four, and when she goes to bed, she goes to sleep. She wouldn't think that, you know, in 30 minutes, come out of the room, and she doesn't have any concept of time, you know? But she definitely wants to watch a lot more scary stuff now. She tells me all the time, she's like, no, I like scary stuff now. I want it scary. I like really scary. I'm like, you don't know scary. I'm sorry. You don't know what scary is. You think the dark is scary. But no, she's fun. She's learning all the Transformers names to my wife's digress.
A future nerd in the works. Nice work.
Oh yeah.
Today, my daughter, who's 2.5, she pulled out my younger son's. He's got the Transformers Rescue Bots Optimus Prime Firehouse thing. It's like a firehouse playset that transforms into Optimus Prime. And she just pulled it out and started playing with it. And there's or my older son has the little Optimus Prime and Bumblebee figures, and she started playing with it. And my wife came in and said, "Did you take that out for her? Did you give her those toys to play with?" And I was like, "No, she did it on her own. She got it. She went and pulled it out and started playing with it."
Also, when are you going to quit accusing me of everything that goes on around here?
So, you know, my wife's like, "Well, she's a princess. She needs to play with princess stuff." I said, "I thought kids should be able to do whatever they want. You know, women, girls can do whatever they want, right?"
Yeah. Quit forcing your gender stereotypes on her.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe she wants to be a princess that plays with Transformers.
That's right.
Exactly.
She wants to be an engineer. Let her be an engineer. Right. She'll figure it out, and she'll be a princess engineer.
All right. So that's all you got, Daryl?
Yeah, other than I took a quick picture of my basement and stitched it together to make a panoramic view of all my collection, and blew Yoshi's mind. So.
Yeah, you make me feel like lesser of a man now. I want you to know.
All right, we'll put a link to that in the show notes so you can make all the rest of our listeners feel bad too.
It is very impressive.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, Jeremy, what did you pick up this week?
Well, I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but right before we were going to record last week's show, one of my UPSs died and took out like half of my home network. So I got a new UPS. It was like a Cyber Monday Amazon deal. So I figured the timing was really good.
Hell yeah, it was. Jeez.
I mean, that not really Transformers related, but kind of podcast related. See, I also, at the Steel City Con that I mentioned previously, I picked up I would say it's kind of near mint. I don't know the exact requirements for these classifications, but it's Marvel Transformers number 5 with the All Our Dead cover.
Oh.
And it's one that, you know, since we've been going through these, I've started getting into the G1 stuff, and this is like the iconic cover, so I had to pick it up.
Love that cover. That cover's badass, man. Good for you.
Good book.
Yeah, I think I might frame it and, you know, put it with some of my collection rather than just sticking it in the box.
I think Yoshi's got a post on his blog for comic framing.
Yeah. I need to stop by the IKEA and here and get some frames and do that.
Well, share some pictures when you got that up next to your family photos.
Right. I'll put it next to my wedding picture.
There you go.
Here's my wedding picture. Yeah. Here's my wife. Here's my Shockwave.
Yeah, but I was really happy when I didn't even think to see if I could open it up before I bought it. And when I finally did open it up, the inside is very good quality. So I think I got a really good deal I paid like $9 for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, between that and then I got the digital version of More Than Meets the Eye 24. I haven't made it to the comic book shop yet. But that's all I got this week.
You buy the digitals and the hard copies?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I like to always be able to, when I get some time, be able to go and read them.
All right.
I find it's different for me. I'm buying the physical copies right now because I always have and I always will. But because we've been getting the review copies, and mind you, the art in the review copies is muted because of the quality is down.
And the giant ass watermark.
The watermark, yeah, sure. That too. I haven't been reading my physical copies. I haven't been going back and rereading them because, you know, we just read it. You know, I just read the thing. Why am I going to read it again? I could flip through it and go, you know, and check out the art again just to see, you know, the giant Metroplex and see how he looked and stuff like that. But I honestly, I've not been going through these things and rereading them. I'm still going to buy them because I want to have them for future. But, it's funny. I'm not actually rereading these things. Are you doing that? Are you going back and rereading them?
I tend to. It just whenever I get a block of time where I'm not really doing anything, I'll go through and reread various things like Last Stand of the Wreckers and some of the ongoing stuff.
Yeah.
Or I get in moods where I just like a few months ago I started at the very first IDW stories and I started going through I think I read probably about 90% of the IDW stuff up to that point.
Wow.
Over like a period of a month or so. So I mean, I don't know. I just since I only pick up pretty much the Transformers comics and then like the odd like He-Man comic that comes out.
Right.
I'm not really getting that many comics, so I can kind of justify double dipping.
Mm-hmm. Do you reread them, Charles, after we've reviewed them?
Nah, I'm with you, Daryl. I think getting the review copies and reading them early. Yeah, I tend not to go back to reading the physical copies after I've gotten them, other than to flip through and check out the art that I couldn't see in the review copy. But I do like to go and like go through a stack once like there's a story arc completed and I have all the issues in hand, so I can go through it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So I think I'll continue to do that in the future. But yeah, with the review copies, issue to issue, I don't tend to reread the issue after I buy it.
Yeah. I just was curious because I wondered if you guys were doing similar as me. Anyway, Yoshi, did you pick up anything this week?
I did. eBay is my crack. It's true. It is. I picked up an unopened 25th anniversary classics reissue, however you want to call it, Perceptor. I'm sure you know.
That's a good toy.
Thank
you.
That's
cool.
I was pretty stoked. I'm shocked how many of these I'm finding aren't opened yet. I think it was $42, which I'm comfortable with.
No, that's about right. Those reissues tend to go for about $40-$45.
And I've got it sitting next to my Starscream from last week.
Nice.
Yeah.
You have it out of the box?
No,
the box?
I haven't. I don't have it out of the box. I don't know what my end game here is, honestly. At some point, I would like to get some sort of glass display and kind of just have a constantly rotating view of my collection. Now, whether I keep those in the box or not, I don't know. Maybe I'll go back and get, depending on the pricing, maybe I'll go get another Perceptor or an open Perceptor or an open Starscream so that I can have them outside of the box. I don't know yet. You know, the toys thing, I've bought toys here and there, but I'm more of a comics guy. So I'm trying to see if this aspect of collecting into the hobby fits me.
Mm-hmm. We've opened up Pandora's box with you for sure. 2 weeks in a row, yeah. You've gotten some some anniversary figures.
Well, I can tell you I got some more shit coming along, and I'll save that for when it gets here. But I'm baby steps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I got this one. You know, my wife is a scientist, so I kind of got this for her when it was new. And she actually has it sitting in the microscope mode on her desk. And, like, most people don't really recognize it, but she's had a couple people be like, is that a Transformer?
And that's awesome. She's like, yeah, my husband got it. I have no idea how to transform it.
It comes with an instruction booklet, you fool.
Yeah. That's cool.
Well, she doesn't really care. No. She just thinks it's neat that she has this toy microscope on her desk.
No, that's cool.
And it actually does like a 10x magnification, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it really, small.
It has a slide too, doesn't it? Like a microscope slide?
Yeah, it has a little, the chest plate can kind of fold down and you can put stuff on it.
That's awesome.
It doesn't really, do much magnification, but like it might be 10x like you said.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I had a Perceptor knockoff when I was a kid. I know I didn't have the real licensed figure, but I think it was one of the ones that like the, the Shaq Wave or Galactic Man that was sold at Radio Shack. I had one of the Perceptor knockoffs and I could pretend it was the real Perceptor or.
Yeah. Well, so many of those early toys were, it was an official license to another company at one time. So it's the same mold probably.
Yeah.
No, I never had Perceptor. I never had Shockwave. I think I remember having 3 Skywarps as a kid because I kept having them and I kept breaking them and my mom just kept replacing them. It was one of those toys that I always kept getting. I never ever had the Starscream. I have them now, but I never had them as a kid.
I feel like I have to share this with you guys. My wife loves Starscream for whatever reason, and she's so jealous. I have this toy that I had to order one for Christmas for her that she doesn't know about.
But oh, that's
she's,
cool. Oh.
She's got Starscream shirts. She's got some not so high quality Starscream action figures, if you can barely call them that. But she just thinks he's awesome. In any incarnation, she likes Starscream. She likes him in the Michael Bay's. She likes him in the comics. She likes him on the cartoon.
Cool.
It's so adorable to watch her.
I don't know if you've been to any like Transformers focus convention, but that's kind of a common thing among like females. Female fans.
I have not, and I did not know that.
Yeah. There are female fans that just go nuts over Starscream.
Huh. She'd probably like that hoodies from 80s Tees. I should maybe get her that.
So she doesn't listen to this episode, does she? Or listen to the podcast, does she?
She doesn't. She thinks that, like the rest of you, she thinks it's a little too nerdy. I'm sure if she were bored, she would do it because she's supportive like that. But no, she doesn't actively. If she wasn't working full-time and going to school full-time, she probably would.
Oh, yeah. When you're doing that, you have no time for anything else.
She doesn't.
Okay, so I don't have to edit this part out.
No.
What about you, Charles? Did you get anything?
Yeah, so I just picked up Dark Cybertron Chapter 4, so More Than Meets the Eye, number 24. I picked that up at my comic shop, and I got the same cover that Daryl got, the Casey Collar Ratchet cover. And that was it for me.
Cool.
All right, so that'll end our Trips to the Store segment. So we'll end the show with some listener feedback. So we heard from Matthew Robert Ignash on Facebook, and he left us a couple of comments on episode 16 and episode 17. So on episode 16, he mentions the third-party blaster that we talked about. So he says, just to let you know, Mega Steel's MS-02 was a downsized Soundwave to Voyager size, and the MS-03 blaster that you talk about in this episode is a reshell of that toy. That's why it has speakers on the insides of the legs, because Soundwave has a leg twist to his legs when he transforms. He needs 2 sets of speakers to always have one set facing forward in robot mode, and another to face forward in tape player mode. There is no reason why this wouldn't hold normal-sized microcassettes, which are the same size as Masterpiece-sized cassettes. G1 Soundwave was a Voyager-sized toy after all, and it holds them. So thanks for that bit of information, Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I didn't know that Blaster was a remold of another third-party Soundwave, so that's interesting.
There's so many of them out right now that you can't keep up. You try your best to keep up with them, and there's just another one.
Yep. All right, and also he left us a comment on episode 17 when we were talking about how Star Saber won the fan poll for Takara for producing a masterpiece toy. And I think in that episode we mentioned that we didn't think Star Saber had another toy after the original G1 that was released. So Matthew gives us a little bit of information. He says Star Saber did have a Robot Masters toy. And also when Jeremy mentioned that he wanted some third-party toys to have rubber tires, Matthew says that Art Feathers toys have rubber tires, so I'm not familiar with that.
I've never heard of them.
Okay, so we'll have to...
Who are Art Feathers? Matthew, tell us, give us some links to who Art Feathers are if you can, because I'm interested to see who Art Feathers toys are, because if they're making rubber tires and they're Transformers, then I'd be very interested to see what they're producing.
Yeah, maybe it's just one designer. I don't know if he's attached to a company. It just says Art Feathers, and his toys have rubber tires. So, yeah. Matthew, if you can give us some more information on that, that'd be great.
And if you don't, it will drive Daryl insane.
Yeah.
And he also has a suggestion for us. So he says, you guys do great reviews on the IDW stuff, but I noticed that no TF podcasts ever review the Collectors Club comics. I know they only print like 6 pages every other month, but maybe you can save up a couple and review one whole story arc at a time. Go back and review the old stories if you have some member with those comics. So I think, Jeremy, you and I both have a Collectors Club subscription. So we both get the comics every other month. So maybe this is something we could look into in the future.
Yeah, we'll definitely consider it. And I do think every so often, I think the Underbase does do the comics, but because you have to be a member to get them, that's probably why you don't see a lot of reviews.
Yeah, and I think on the Underbase, they only do the BotCon comic. They don't do like the comics that come as part of the subscription service.
Yeah, FunPub releases the BotCon comic as a standalone thing that comic shops can buy, so that's probably why they can get the hold of that one.
Yeah. So we'll take a look at that and see if we can fit that into some future shows if we get a chance. All right, I think that'll wrap up this episode of Transmission. So as always, thanks for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
I'm with Tom.
Talk to you later. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for picking up our transmission. Give us feedback on our website at www.transmissionspodcast.com, where you can find all of our contact info on social media and links to all of our show notes discussed in each episode. You can also email us directly at feedback@transmissionspodcast.com.